Welcome to another sermon podcast from Central Presbyterian Church in Atlanta, Georgia. This episode will feature a sermon delivered by the Reverend Shannon J. Kirshner. The sermon is based on scripture from Psalm 91, verses 9 through 16, and Mark chapter 10, verses 35 through 45. Central Sunday morning service for the 20th of October, 2024, the 22nd Sunday after Pentecost, was streamed to our website, our Facebook page, and our YouTube channel. A complete video or sermon audio replay of this service may be found on cpcatlanta.org. Select the upper right menu, and then Sermons Under Worship.
Thank you, Lewis. Our gospel reading today comes again from the Gospel of Mark. We're in the 10th chapter, and I'm actually going to begin with verse 32 and read through verse 45. I invite you to again listen for God's living word. They were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. They were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. Jesus took the 12 disciples aside again and began to tell them what was to happen to him, saying, "Look, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death. And they will hand him over to the Gentiles, and they will mock him and spit upon him and flog him and kill him, and after 3 days he will rise again." James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to Jesus and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What is it that you want me to do for you?" And they said to Jesus, "Appoint us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I'm baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or my left is not mine to appoint, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the 10 other disciples heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. Instead, whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be a servant of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God. So whenever I read this scripture, I can't help but think that James and John, sons of Zebedee, would have greatly enjoyed living through election seasons in this country. Why, you might wonder? They would have loved the political ads. For in almost every political ad, in one way or another, the question is being asked, "What do you want me to do for you?" And in almost every political ad, in one way or another, the answer is given, "Vote for me and I will look out for your interest." The underlying assumption to most of our politics is that if you support a candidate, that candidate will bring you to the top of the heap along with them. I know we use the term public servants for our elected leaders, and in some cases, that term for our public officials is still very appropriate, but not in all cases. I'm sure you could think of a few. Servanthood is the last thing that comes to mind. Rather, for some candidates, it's all about winning and making it to the top, power and success, glory and prestige, while ensuring that those who oppose them suffer as a result. But that glory and prestige promise is why I imagine James and John would have loved it. For that kind of glory and prestige promise was what James and John were after that day on the road to Jerusalem with Jesus. Now, we have to admit that Mark, the gospel writer, did not always paint the disciples in a very flattering light. He certainly didn't pull any punches with James and John. Just look at how he told this story. In the beginning of our scripture reading, Jesus tells his disciples for the third time about his impending death and resurrection. And in this third passion prediction, Jesus spells it out very clearly. His description is intricately detailed. We're going to Jerusalem right now, and I'm going to be handed over to the religious authorities, and they will condemn me to death, and they will hand me over to the Gentiles, and they will mock me, spit on me, flog me, kill me, and after 3 days I will rise again. Handed over, condemned, mocked, spat upon, flogged, killed, and then risen. Jesus spells it out slowly in an intricate detail. But then without even an attempt at transition or a hint that any time had passed since Jesus' ominous words of his suffering and death, Mark writes that James and John came forward to take Jesus aside. They wanted to ask a favor. Jesus, when you take your throne in glory as the King of all creation, we want to be seated on your right and on your left in the high places of honor. Like at the grand opening of a new private club here in Atlanta, James and John longed to be on the red carpet, smiling for all the paparazzi, surrounded by all the beautiful people, enjoying the sweet taste of fame and victory and power with each sip of Cristal. Their request makes them look like the school children in a Charlie Brown cartoon. To them, Jesus' prediction sounded like the teacher we can never understand. Wah, 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 wah. Clearly, the only words James and John heard Jesus say were, "Rise again." All of the other words of suffering and death were nonsensical to their ears. And James and John let their desire for power and glory just stand right there in front of Jesus, brazenly naked for all to see. They didn't even try to wipe their faces as their mouths watered at the possibility of finally being a part of the it crowd, the ones who made it to the top of the heap, the winners, the ones who all the other people wanted to be. James and John revealed their ambition for power and glory in full view of Jesus. And you know Jesus must have just shook his head, wondering how in their 3 years together they had not really learned much about discipleship at all, despite their earnestness. Yet Jesus doesn't seem to be that ruffled by it. He seems to have all the patience in the world, and his steadfast patience is very curious to me. Maybe Jesus was so patient with James and John because he knew from whence they had come. James and John had been fishermen before becoming disciples. They had worked sun up to sun down trying to provide for their families. They always had to work so hard just to get by, just to make it. It had been a check-to-check kind of life for the brothers, a bring-the-calculator-to-the-store kind of life, a life where lottery tickets seem the only way out and the cover of People magazine only reminds you of what you do not have. Jesus knew from where the brothers had come, and he loved them, so he was patient with them. "Boys, you don't know what you're asking," Jesus responded. "Given all that I have told you, do you really think that you are able to drink from my cup and be baptized in my baptism?" Again, the brothers failed to hear the meaning behind the words. Jesus meant a cup of suffering and vinegar sipped on the cross and a baptism into the death and burial of the old order. And the brothers pictured a bejeweled golden goblet and a baptism of sparkling Perrier. "Oh yes, we are able," they responded enthusiastically. Jesus knew they still didn't get it, but he loved them. Soon the word of their request got back to the others, and the tension was so thick amongst the disciples you could have cut it with a knife. They were all angry, perhaps because James and John had beaten them to the punch. They all wanted a piece of that glory. They all wanted to be winners. They all wanted that power and prestige, and Jesus sensed the tension in the air, and he must have realized that none of the disciples had really heard his words. None of his disciples knew what it truly meant to follow him. So he tried one more time. Jesus called them all together and tried to lay it out there for them to see. "Listen," he began, "y'all think you know what I'm talking about, but you don't get it yet. You hear my words and assume I'm on my way to the top and you're ready to ride my coattails to glory. You see all the attention that I'm getting and think that means the party is about to begin with red carpets and golden goblets. You see me as the winning lottery ticket to success and prosperity and power. You think it's about being a winner and being served. But try to listen to me one more time. Being one of my followers means you stop asking, what do I get out of this? And start asking, what can I give for this? Being a part of my body means you stop wondering, what can my church do for me? And you start asking, what can our church do for the world? Drinking from my cup at the table and being baptized in the water of my font means you stop asking, how can I be served? And you start asking, how can I be of service to others? For example, it means we embody what Black Mountain singer-songwriter David Lamont recently defined as community. You give what you can and you take what you need. You ask for help when you need it and you do what you can to be of use in the meantime. Power and prestige and glory and making it to the top are the last things on your mind. It's a completely topsy-turvy way of living and being, friends. In Jesus' world, in the world of discipleship, if we're looking for what great means, remember we talked about this a few weeks ago, we look for the bottom rung of the ladder. We don't climb our way to the top over others. For according to Jesus, the Gentiles are the ones who use power over people. They are the ones constantly reminding everyone who is large and in charge, who is strong and who is powerful, at least according to them. But it is not to be so among us. Among us all, Jesus' disciples, Jesus' friends, it is not to be so among us. When Jesus asked those questions of the disciples, he must have paused for effect. Maybe they were listening, maybe not. I've been wondering if it's maybe they just couldn't bear to hear his words yet. Maybe they were like Mark Twain, who wrote, "It ain't the parts of the Bible I can't understand that trouble me, it's the parts I do understand." Maybe the disciples understood exactly what Jesus was asking of them, and they just weren't ready yet. My goodness, they had come from nothing. They were considered nobodies, and they had given up everything to follow this Jesus. And now he was telling them that whenever they desired for more power as a church and as his followers, they were called to replace that desire for more power with a desire for more love. And whenever they thought about control, they were called to meditate on a cross. And whenever they wanted to be the leader, they needed to first remember they were being led. Perhaps James and John knew exactly what Jesus was saying to them. But Jesus' call for his church to be defined by servanthood was so counterintuitive to the world of red carpets and People magazine and political campaigns. It terrified them. It is awfully hard to practice what Jesus is always preaching. Eventually, though, somewhere between that moment on the road and the end of their lives, we think James and John got it. They finally heard Jesus' words and were able to truly understand. They finally saw the world through the same topsy-turvy eyes as Jesus did, where the last were to be first, and the bottom rung of the ladder was the place to be as a member of Christ's body. We think this because one of the earliest church historians, Jerome, recorded stories about the end of John's life. According to the tradition, the disciple John was the only one of the 11 who did not meet a violent death. He died a very old man in the city of Ephesus. According to Jerome, at the end of John's life, he was unable to walk into the church, but rather had to be carried by others. And he was unable to preach long sermons, but rather could only say a few words. But the words he always said were, "Little children, love one another." Those who were in the church with him heard what he said, but tended to not really listen to him. Instead, they were always pushing him for more, for something different, something a little smarter sounding. Surely there was something else he could tell them about being a disciple, something a little more sophisticated. Surely there was something more, something about glory or power or prestige. But in response to their pushing, John always replied, "It is the Lord's command to love one another. And if this alone be done, it is enough." Love instead of power. Serving instead of being served. A cross instead of control. "Friends," Jesus said to them on the road to Jerusalem, "are you sure you know what you're asking? Are you going to be able to drink from my cup and be baptized by my baptism? Are we?"
We are glad you joined us for this podcast from Central Presbyterian Church. Central is a welcoming congregation of the Presbyterian Church USA located in downtown Atlanta across from the state capital. For more information about the life, work, and ministries, please visit our website at cpcatlanta.org. We also invite you to join us for worship and Sunday school and experience this exciting and diverse body of believers who seek to be bearers of God's justice in the world. Thanks again for listening.